I noticed that no matter what their problem was, we call it HIDDEN, hidden, I call them hidden stressors, dysfunctions, contributors to that metabolic cast. And they lie within the hormone. Like, I check hormones in every person, the immune system, every person. The first D is digestion. The next D is detoxification. It's HIDD. Now, I did very well with that. Like, batting average was really high, helping people. But when I learned about energy production and the balancing the nervous system, that's the EN. So hidden, hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification, energy production on a cellular level, and then nervous system balance, your autonomic sympathetic versus parasympathetic must be balanced. And after all, balance and resiliency, I think, defines health. Balance and resiliency defines health.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Welcome to episode 220 of the Anthropology Podcast. I am your host, Megan Walker. Today's episode is super interesting. Super interesting for those of you who really want to understand what is below the hood of your health. I'm joined today by Reed Davis. And Reed is a board certified holistic health practitioner and the founder of Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. He has literally trained thousands of practitioners around the world on how to leverage functional testing, how to understand and go deep on functional testing to truly understand what's happening inside someone's body and someone's health. His key to what he does is not necessarily all of the years he has spent in school. It is literally the thousands of tests that he has performed on patients over the course of his career. Reed offers such incredible and unique insight in terms of what is going on with our bodies on a functional level, not lab testing that just pumps out a value, but lab testing that helps us to understand the intricacies of what is developing and what is going on in our health. It was a fascinating question that really created a deeper understanding of our susceptibility to viruses, the metabolic chaos that can happen when we have hormones that are dysregulated, and truly a unique insight in terms of the role of stress and how it plays out in shifting our health over the long term. It is truly my pleasure to introduce you to Reed Davis. Reed Davis, welcome to the Anthropology Podcast.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this conversation. We're gonna talk about something that we've kind of hinted at in our world on the Anthropology Podcast, and that is around this idea of infection and immunity and susceptibility, and frankly, how our microbiome plays into the overarching status of our health and of our life. And before we do that, I'm wondering, Reed, if you can give all of us a little bit of a background in terms of who you are and why you are uniquely qualified to drive this conversation today.
Oh, well, thanks so much. I started back in the 90s, actually. I was in environmental law. So I was a conservationist and I was saving the planet, air, birds, water, trees, bees. And I was noticing how bad the environment was for these living things. And then I started turning my attention to, well, if it's so bad for trees and bees, what's the environment doing to people, including me? And I didn't want anything sneaking up on me. I didn't have any health problems. I'd never really been to a doctor. But I changed my focus then on what's happening with people. And I went to work in a wellness center. And the owner was getting her diplomat in nutrition as a physician and said that I could go along with her and work on, you know, as an assistant and get my own certificate in nutrition and work on her patients in between classes. Now, who gets that opportunity, right? But I did, and I fell in love with working with the public and face-to-face. It was so exciting. And what I noticed was that most people had already been to 5 or 8 or 10 different practitioners. And it blew my mind. Again, I'd never really had a health problem. I'd been to the dentist a few times, but I didn't know what the medicine system was like. And these people were desperately searching for some answers and weren't getting them anywhere else. So, you know, me, the little ensign that could, I just said, well, I'm going to figure out what's wrong with you. And that was so long ago. It seems so naive now. But I went to work running thousands of labs on thousands of people. So I kind of became an expert in functional lab work. Back then it was called quackery. I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? It's like it was alternative, then it was complementary, then it was integrative, then it was functional. Now Jeff Bland, he calls it personalized or individualized medicine. And so that's where we are now. But my history is having run thousands of labs on thousands of people. Long time ago, I noticed a few patterns. And so I just came up with a system of investigation. There are certain labs I run on every person. And then the other beauty I'll just finish with, I think you'll appreciate this as a naturopath. You know, I couldn't write a prescription. I wasn't a physician. I didn't really have any medical background, but I'm good at R&D and did my homework and came up with all natural protocols, so totally drug-free. And so here it is 22 years later. I've run thousands and thousands of labs. I've trained an army of practitioners and you learn a few things over the years.
You have learned a lot over the year. And I actually, our audience is a group that is equally compelled by an understanding of health as they are of entrepreneurship. And I'm wondering, before we start to get into some of those patterns, if you can share a little bit about functional diagnostic nutrition, what that is as a company and how you built it, because I actually think that's an equally compelling part of the story.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was just working in an office. I was doing all this research, running all these labs just to get good at helping people in our office. It was in a wellness center in Southern California. Where I got all those patients from was going out and lecturing. I just love to go talk about health and wellness. And I explained my work, what I was doing with the labs and with the all natural protocols, always trying to get to the underlying cause, something upstream. And I noticed some interesting things about that what helped one person. I'm talking about miracles, people whose migraines went away, their skin cleared up, their ADD, ADHD went away, they just you name it. But then I tried to duplicate it on the next person with the same steps, what labs to use and it didn't work. And I came up with this, I coined this phrase, metabolic chaos. Like, that's pretty much there's something wrong upstream, and it's very complex, and we're not quite sure what it is. But this pattern I recognize of labs, like hormones, immune system, digestion, detoxification, we get some healing opportunities there. And that's another phrase, because I don't diagnose and treat specific. We look for healing opportunities and then apply general principles of health building. And people just miraculously would get better. This idea that what worked for one didn't work for the other, it threw me for a little while till I came up with that phrase, metabolic chaos. And so after 10 years, going out and lecturing and having a lot of success, a lot of fun and very fulfilling job, if you will, at this wellness center, everyone started telling me I should be teaching. Like, a little old lady comes up to me and she goes, "You should be teaching the doctor." and the lab called me and they said, "Who the hell are you? Nobody runs this many labs. Like, you must have 5 doctors working for you, right?" I said, "No, it's just me." And so after 10 years, I started teaching and I had to call it something. I didn't even have the name. At the time in 2008, functional diagnostic nutrition sounded really good. It's functional in nature. We just care about, you know, not diagnosing or treating disease, but we give a complete monopoly to licensed practitioners for that. But you know, functional, what's really wrong? And the diagnostic in nature, not a medical diagnosis, but just, you know, can we get some data that'll help explain what's going on? So a functional diagnostic in nature. And then the nutrition came from, I am a certified nutritionist and lots of other things, but it's more nurturing, nutrition, nurturing, you know, giving the body and person what they really need. So functional diagnostic in nature, nurturing. That's what it was called. And it stuck. Now there's like an army of people that call themselves FDNs or FDNers, FDN practitioners. And it's really quite a remarkable group of people. I said I trained 3,000. There's 500 dues-paying members to our alumni group. So we must be doing some good in the world.
I really love this. I love the model that you've built, and also that term metabolic chaos. As a practitioner, I can relate to that, because until I actually started running more tests in my practice, I felt like patients would come in and I had this black bag and I could stick my hand in the bag and I knew there was something in there, but I really, like, I couldn't see what's happening. And I'm curious, before we delve in again to looking at some of these patterns, I'd love to hear your perspective on the role of functional testing in an active person who's engaged in their environment versus genetic testing and the relationship between those two streams.
Yeah, you know, I have my opinion about it. You know, genetics are really important. Basically, I think all disease processes begin with genetic potential. Like me, you know, I don't have the genetic potential to play in the National Basketball League. You know, like, I just don't have that kind of potential. But we have potential to be really healthy, and we have some genes that if they express, it won't result in good things, good function in that. So you know, you've heard the expression, genes load the gun, and it's epigenetics. It's your lifestyle and environment that pull the trigger. So I think all disease starts with genetic potential, and then negative signaling from the environment. Remember, I started as environmental conservationist, and then of course, lifestyle. And people, sometimes no fault of their own, live really crappy lifestyles. So you got genetic potential. And so sometimes looking at the genes might be important. I know that I have genes for certain things, and I kind of watch out. My dad had colon cancer, and his dad had colon cancer, and I've got the gene for colon. So for gosh sakes, I'm watching my P's and Q's around the things that would influence the genes to express in that way, you know, to create colon cancer in me. So, but I mean, if you're going to instruct a person, you can't just use genes, because it's more the expression of them that matters. I think everyone listening would understand epigenetics is the trick. So it's the environment and lifestyle. You can't change your genes. So if disease is genes, negative signaling from environment and lifestyle, well, we better watch that environment and lifestyle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's funny, because as someone who, as a practitioner, would look at both the genetic side and at the functional side, if I could only pick one side, I would actually look at the function. It's like the blueprint versus walking through the actual home. And we've referenced it a few times, but you mentioned these patterns that you would start to see with people. What were some of those, like, big, high level, 30,000 foot view? What are some of these patterns that you would start to see, and some of the sequences you'd start to see in common illness?
Yeah, that's really a good question for me, because I came up with a very definite pattern. And what I noticed, and I was working mostly with women at first, and as they got some success, they would bring their kids and they would bring their husbands. But women was the bulk of it. And I noticed that no matter what their problem was, we call it HIDDEN, hidden. I call them hidden stressors, dysfunctions, contributors to that metabolic chaos. And they lie within the hormone. Like, I check hormones in every person, the immune system, every person. The first D is digestion. The next D is detoxification. It's HIDD. Now, I did very well with that. Like, batting average was really high, helping people. But when I learned about energy production and the balancing the nervous system, that's the EN. So hidden, hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification, energy production on a cellular level, and then nervous system balance, your autonomic sympathetic versus parasympathetic must be balanced. And after all, balance and resiliency, I think, defines health. Balance and resiliency defines health. So if you look for balance in those areas, and those are the healing opportunities. The healing opportunities lie within those six main areas. Now, there's other areas. There's oxidative stress. There's other stuff you can look at, and we do. But that hidden pattern is a great place to start, especially when you consider that people are coming with such complex issues. They have a lot of complaints, and it's hard for them to pick one. We try to get them to pick one. Pick one. That would be easy. They have, so people are really suffering. And so if you look for, people say, I want to find the root cause. Well, there's 14 complaints, each one with possibly, 25, 30, 40 different causes. And then those causes upstream are having an effect upon each other. So that's where the term metabolic chaos came from. So if you don't have a system, then you can be floundering in the functional medicine space real easily. And so I find that if you identify healing opportunities within those areas, give people things to do to create balance and resiliency within the hormones. They're not that hard to balance out. The immune system, digestion, flora balance, microbiome, as you mentioned, and then detoxification. You have the liver and the other organs that help you detoxify. And if you eat right, you can produce energy on a cellular level, the right rate, quality, quantity. All cells don't have to be taught what their job is. They know what their job is, mm-hmm. They're fed right, and you don't mess with them. Don't pollute them, and don't overstress them.
So in looking at the system and looking at the hidden pattern, do you have any level of commentary with respect to our broad global susceptibility right now to something like COVID based on environmental influences or global health status? Like, is there high level, this is a no-brainer because we see X, Y, and Z, and then we'll get into individual susceptibility. But I'm interested in your high level commentary.
Okay, thanks. Well, I appreciate that. I don't consider myself an expert in epidemiology or any of these things, virology and that. But I know that we have built-in resistance, built-in, low risk, or again, because of genetics, the environment and lifestyle and the effects that, the negative signal there, you could have a higher risk for anything, COVID or parasites, other, viruses, bacteria, fungus. So we're all being subjected to these things all the time, but not everyone gets sick. So people who get sick have, I think, obviously a higher risk factors. And I take this really broad global view that if you're controlling that environment and lifestyle, you can reverse your high susceptibility and become very resistant to just about any pathogen. There's some that are virulent. I don't care how healthy you are, they will kick your butt. Ebola virus a few years ago was really a virulent thing. If you got off a plane from West Africa and your temperature was 105, you're not about to call your nutritionist anyway.
So probably not.
Same thing. You're a victim of a drive-by shooting. You're not going to call your health coach. But there's a place there where if someone gets out of the woods with medical treatment, like if it was a really serious virus and you get out of the woods, that's what physicians do so well, then you are in our backyard where the observations we can make can be useful. And that, I think, is a major distinction between the natural, you know, functional stuff that we do versus what a medical doctor can do. Because if the downward spiral, so these chronic degenerative conditions, it's a downward spiral. You're basically getting worse if you're not getting better. And if that is a really contracted process, like, then the observations we make about hormones, immune, digestion, they can't be capitalized on. So you don't have time to correct and naturally balance your hormones and your immune system and improve digestion and all those things need to be done to make you resistant, but you got to get out of the woods first. So we work really well with the medical community. I would say we're actually the perfect complement to heroic medicine.
What testing are you loving to run right now? Like, what are some of those key functional tests that you're like, if I've got these four, then I have a complete picture? What's at the top of your list?
Everyone wants to pin me down, but again, I like the saliva testing. I've been doing it for years on the hormones. Just getting cortisol and DHEA and the sex hormones and melatonin from a saliva test is really good. Obviously, there's dried urine, which is also very good. And matter of fact, with dried urine now, you can get a broader picture. You can cast a wider net and look for some additional healing opportunities. But when it comes to hormones, I like old-fashioned good saliva testing. And then we look at the mucosal barrier. We actually have testing now that's blood spot, so you can do that at home too. And convenience matters to us. We don't want to send all of our clients for blood draws all the time. You probably are going to have to include that. But so saliva testing, dried urine testing, finger spot, the blood spot testing for zonulin. There's a new test out for zonulin for leaky gut that's just a finger stick. I could mail a little package to someone in any country, anywhere almost, and they can mail it back to the lab, which happens to be in Toronto, by the way. You're my hometown and where you live. And so I like the saliva testing, the dried urine testing, the finger stick testing, and stool testing, of course. That's not as much fun to collect, but it's not much trouble to do at home. And you get that into the lab, and it can tell us things about you, can give us insights into what needs to be healed. And it's sometimes treated. We refer out as needed for that. So if there's anything really virulent, and we know when to ask for oversight. So it works really well together. And of course, blood draws are still required for certain labs, like food sensitivity testing and things like that.
What kind of patterns have you seen shift in the last 10 years of running functional tests? Like, have you seen some broad strokes changes in terms of like types of estrogen levels that are higher or lower testosterone counts or different types of bacterial patterns on GI maps? I'm curious about some of the underlying shifts.
There's two ways to answer that question. One is just about the lab access itself and the number of labs in the game of functional medicine. So the variety is phenomenal. Some of the developments in the testing have really, I think, improved. Some have been I'll say bastardized in a way, if I could say that, because they're casting such wide nets that people who don't know what they're looking for are running those big, huge, wide net labs. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they don't really know what they're looking for, and they're hoping they catch something. And they'll get a test that has, 50, 80 or more markers on it and say, oh, look what we found. And they weren't looking for it. And it may be a healing opportunity or not if it's out of range. But it also may have nothing to do with the person's complaints. Right. Just as you see it there and it's out of range doesn't mean it's causal in whatever that person's showing up for. So I learned the old-fashioned way from some tough old pioneers in the field that you never waste your client's money. You're supposed to know what you're looking for. So your history taking, your interview, and all these things have to be good so that you've got a good, you know, way to select what labs to run. And again, I run multiple labs in every person. So I think the lab testing has changed in itself. They're offering these big wide nets because they can bill insurance companies five times what the smaller test costs and things like that. It's just a weird game that I see being played. But when it comes to the actual findings, chronic stress is not going away. And so we see people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, with all the convenience and things, you know, life has gotten too cushy. You know, people are really not doing themselves any favor with some of this technology and stuff. You look at kids, the amount of time they spend with these little devices in their hands. I think they're being ruined myself. But so I see a lot of patterns like that around technology that are supposed to make life easier, but aren't making us healthier. And I can't say, oh, I'm finding more people with this bacteria than another, you know, like H. pylori and E. coli showed up in everyone 20 years ago and it's still showing up, but now we can test for more things. So you're finding more things. And again, I'm concerned because I'm not sure it has much to do with your particular health complaints, you know, when dealing with an individual. And you can't just treat it just because you see it. You must clinically correlate. I think that's the one skill I really emphasize in my course that I teach is clinical correlation. Like, does this test explain what's going on with your customer? If it's a patient, client, whatever, you know, and I taught, I was with a lab for 10 years as a clinical advisor. I talked to doctors every week who didn't know what test to run. And knowing what we know, I would say, well, here's five tests you could run. Which one, you know, do you want to leave out? Why, you know, which one wouldn't you run? Because when you're looking upstream, you've got to look cover hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification. I know that system works. So I'll try to wrap it up and say I've seen a lot of improvements in technology and a lot of variety in the lab work. I think it's moved the needle some in our ability to look upstream and find healing opportunities. But you got to know what you're looking for. And I'm not sure I answered it completely. I know that, as I said, stress isn't going away. Chronic stress is still driving cortisol up. Cortisol has an effect on the gut, basically shuts down gut and secretory IgA. Then you become susceptible to dysbiosis and SIBO and other things, bigger bugs than that. And then you end up with leaky gut. And then you can end up with autoimmune. And then you have liver and liver congestion and detoxification problems. So, you know, it can all affect how you think and feel. And so you get real messes out there.
I love how you just painted this picture of how one problem can lead to the next. And I was talking to someone earlier who was describing brain fog to her practitioner. And he was like, oh, it's just perimenopausal. You have to deal with it. And the truth is when you start to look in that black bag, you recognize that there's way more granularity. But I actually love what you said there, where you brought up this idea of clinical correlation. Mm-hmm. And I'm always interested in, like, what is the most empowering question patients can be asking their practitioner? I know we have a lot of people in our listenership who are seeing functional practitioners who are investing in testing. And I think for them, having the capacity to ask their practitioner, how is this test clinically correlated to my symptom picture or my health status? I think that's a really empowering question as a health consumer to be able to ask. So I actually love that you brought that up.
Yeah. You know, the most frequently asked question by a frustrated health consumer, if you will, patient, client, the most frequent question they ask when they're caught in that cycle of trial and error, and they've been to 8 or 10 practitioners already, is, do you know what's wrong with me? And, you know, they get a lot of shoulder shrugs and not sure. And or they get, well, it sounds like this. So their practitioners would listen. Let's say they're tired, fatigued, they're gaining weight, they can't lose it, their hair's thinning, their extremities are, cold or even numb, they have constipation, swelling at the ankle. It sounds like thyroid. So, physicians are assessing, they're forming an impression, they're coming up with something to try to help the person, and it sounds like thyroid. Well, God forbid they run a thyroid test and find hypothyroidism, because they'll say, yes, I know it's wrong. I found your problem. It's hypothyroidism. And then they'll medicate, give them something to change the numbers on the paper. We call that treating the paper. And not the person, because there's so many things contributory to endocrine dysfunction. And, thyroid is just one of the endocrine organs. So, there's just so much metabolic chaos that results in endocrine dysfunction. And by the way, endocrine dysfunction contributes to metabolic chaos. So you have these very blurred lines between what's causal and what's resultant. And if you don't have a broad, the way I like to put it is when things are so complex, that makes the case for having a simplifying and unifying approach. And so I've spent 22 years trying to come up with a simplifying, unifying approach, and it's always being tweaked. And, yet there are some basic, some people call it wisdom of sorts or something that things that we've just discovered, uncovered that make a lot of sense and have resulted in tremendous success with a broad range of the public, like no matter what their problem is. Again, I have 500 practitioners who are out there doing this, and they're the active ones who do it for a living. They're all basically health entrepreneurs. We're the sort of champions of the independent health counseling community. They call them health coaches, health counselors. They all have degrees of some sort. Some even have licenses, and they have some certificates of some sort. They have a lot of work experience, and they come to us finally, and we train them to use the labs and the all-natural protocols systematically, and it works. There's no guarantee of results because we can't control all the outcomes, but man, so many, we just ask for reasonable expectations. So when you get someone who's caught in this like a trial and error, we just have our patterns. We just follow the system, and it takes a little faith at first, but then it becomes just how you do business.
I'm interested too, because, and I like what you said about this idea of, this concept of treating the paper. And I feel like so much of modern medicine is about treating the paper, because it's an understanding of health. The average health consumer can understand, here are your thyroid values, we'll give you a med, we'll bring them back into normal, and the body's that simple. And anyone who's actually been truly ill and wanting to address the root cause knows that it's not that simple. So I really did love that example. I'm curious, just as there's patterns when people are unwell, are there patterns that you see on lab tests that you find are predictive of health? So maybe it's around metabolic balancing. Maybe it's around microbiome. Maybe it's around, like, what are some of the indicators you see conversely where you're like, man, these are kind of outcomes or these kind of values are actually highly correlated to positive health status?
Yes. And we do want to distinguish between what might be an emergent condition where, doctors aren't going to worry about some of these things. If they have a person with, really bad headaches, they're probably going to do a brain scan, make sure they don't do a tumor, rule out the really bad stuff, which I'm not qualified or licensed to do. I can't order a CT scan or any of these things. So there's that. So when it's not an emergent condition, though, let's say the doctors ruled out the really bad things and said, your blood work actually looks kind of normal. Yet this person's obviously suffering from chronic sort of degenerative, downward spiraling health problems, underneath. Again, I found the pattern of HIDDEN, but when you look at the hormones, that cortisol to DHA ratio is really important. They're catabolic when their cortisol is is dominant, and that's not good. DHEA is the anabolic counter-regulatory hormone to that. So we look at simple things like that. Oxidative stress is huge. You know, when someone has, we use 8-hydroxydeoxyguanosine or 8-OHDG for that measurement. Well, that's a healing opportunity. When you see that their DNA is being broken down and damaged inside the cells, that's important. That's where that's almost a direct view. You're looking right in the window of epigenetics happening before you. So there's ways to look around. You have to be a health detective. You look around for the things that would be creating that oxidative stress. You know, that can be the environment. Again, in lifestyle, those are the two major contributors to chaos anyway. To, people who smoke, people who overexercise, people who work somewhere in a factory with toxins and chemicals and that. But it could also be household care products. It could be personal care products. It could be new furniture, paint. There's so many things that will contribute to chaos. So that's, again, I made a comment earlier about in an emergent condition, there's no time for any of that. The stuff that we do is life coaching and health coaching. And so the observations we make, like cortisol to DHEA ratio or estrogen to progesterone dominance or all these other things, you need time to give that person to correct their behavior. In other words, if you lived yourself into this problem, you can live yourself out of this problem. Give us the time and we'll change your whole life. And it's amazing how fast some of it works. You know, 90 mm-hmm. days, the people are used to going to a physician. Here's your pills. Come back in 90 days. We say, after we run our labs, here's all the things we're going to do for the next 90 days. We're going to be there to help you and coach you up through the challenges you're going to face and correct course as we go. There's no like take this for 90 days in our world.
I love this idea of do versus take, because health is rarely predicated upon things that you take. Sure, we can remove symptoms with things that you take, but very rarely can we build health with it, supplements or otherwise. So I think that's such an important perspective.
You know, Megan, I learned that in the office. Remember, I was new to the field. I've been in environmental, conservation, cleaning up the planet. And turned my attention to people. So I went to work in this clinic. It was actually my son's chiropractor. I just said, hey, I'm looking for something different to do in this area. I'm thinking about starting a wellness business or corporate wellness consulting or something. She said, well, come and work for me and we'll figure it out. And she put me to work. I was running the business, but I told you I went to that course with her. She was getting her diplomat, started working with people. And the idea of what they do at home became so obvious to me. You know, like people were coming in for their chiropractic. We had acupuncture. We had nutrition. I ended up being the nutritionist. And I would say, look, Mrs. Smith, it's not what you do coming in the office. You're a very good patient. You come in every week like you're supposed to. What are you doing between visits? That's what I want to know. And that's where I think you're going to get the most benefit. So I became a personal trainer and a nutritionist and all these things. I have maybe 15 certificates. None of them are a doctor's license, but I learned a lot. And again, the most important thing was the experience of running thousands of labs on thousands of people and making my own observations about who got well and coming up with these patterns. So this idea of it's what you do between visits, that's what really matters, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, coming full circle back to your beginning in terms of conservation and looking at environmental health, what is one thing you wish as a society we would pay attention to that you think would really move the needle for us globally in terms of health?
Oh gosh, you know, I wish I could say something really poignant and memorable here, you know, because it's quite an opportunity to do that. I think that we are not in control of our health and other freedoms that we've sort of given up to to others. You know, last year taught me a real lesson that if you don't control your own environment and lifestyle, you won't have your health. You won't have very many freedoms at all. You'll be dancing to the tune of others. And I think that somehow communication and maintaining that control, you know, the idea of freedom and self-awareness and controlling our own health is really critical. You know, I think that's what I would say. People need to sort of pay attention, you know, and don't go along like sheep so much. And that may not seem like it has a lot to do with health, but it does, because there are those that would have monopolies who I don't think they have our health in mind. You know, I don't think that's their main goal.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting recognizing the importance of freedom in our society. Okay. That the idea of taking radical responsibility for your health is actually the gateway to freedom.
Yeah, you know, we've been conditioned over decades and decades and decades to let others be in control. Like I could take it right back to the beginning, Megan, when I noticed that everyone coming in the office. Remember, I'd never really been to a doctor. I didn't know what the system was like. And I said, what do you mean you've been to 5 people or 8 people, 10, and you spent how much and you're not better yet? What a ripoff. Like, that's just a ripoff, you know, but people just go to the next person and go to the next person. They never really get the help that they're desperately searching for. And so, you know, I try to make a difference, and I think we're taking our best stab at it. But those people, the mistake they're making, I recognize it then, was you're putting your health in someone else's hands. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to find the person who's going to – well, it needs to be in your own hands, and it is. You can control your environment to a large extent. You can certainly control your lifestyle. You know, only you determines what goes in your mouth, what time you go to bed, how much exercise you do, what kind of stress. I mean, stress is ubiquitous, and we all have to deal with it, but you can control it to a large degree. And you can certainly – and I don't have my own brand, but taking supplements I find is really important too. Thank goodness there's some really good companies with very high integrity using stuff or using the good stuff in their products, because food is not what it used to be when I was a kid. I can go on. I got stories.
I feel like we could go on about this all day, but it's so interesting because what you're testing for is the metabolic byproducts of the information we put into our bodies. And, you know, my perspective has always been that supplements are just a dense form of information, more often than not positive information. Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested in your work, because what it does is it takes away this idea of guessing with respect to our health. It gives us an objective lens in terms of where we are at. And I think it really is very important work. I also feel like we're at a really great point in the interview to shift to something that I call our KPIs. So just like we have key performance indicators in our business, I believe we have them in how we live our lives as well. And I've got a few questions, rapid fire questions coming at your way, Reed.
You
ready?
Yeah.
Brace yourself.
Okay.
First one, what is your most recommended book of all time?
Oh, man. Well, I love The Original Prescription by Dr. Thomas Williams. It's, I think, 2012 he wrote that. The Original Prescription. I also love, I have to mention my friend Bill Wolcott's book. William Wolcott wrote The Metabolic Typing Diet. And I don't know if you remember Borders Bookstore, but I was in one in 2001 and picked that up and read it first chapter. I bought 6 copies. Took it back to the office and made everyone read it. So those are my 2 favorites. Why Stomach Acid Is Good For You by Jonathan Ray. I can go on, but those are some good ones for you.
I love it. What is your favorite health hack?
Favorite health hack? You know, I like getting bodily fluids. You know, saliva, urine, blood, stool. I like you know, sending stuff off to the lab and getting it back. I can't pick a favorite right now. The microbiome stuff, the new microbiome things are really interesting. But I love my good old fashioned saliva, your metabolic wellness panel. Everyone should do a leaky gut test. Everyone should do a food sensitivity test. That could be one of my most productive tests, the mediated release test for foods.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wish more people are saying to me, I don't ever want to have that testing done because I don't want to know. But I think it's the gateway to good health for so many people.
A quick comment on that, Megan, if you will. Mm-hmm. You can't predict looking forwards who it's going to help the most, but we do it on everyone because looking backwards, man, that was the test. That was the home run test. I mean, I've had people who had their head under a pillow in a dark room 5 days a week with severe migraines, completely snap out of it. Kids with ADD and ADHD. I had a principal of a school call me back in the day and say, what'd you put Billy on? You know, we just got him off the foods that were irritating his nervous system, and on and on and on with these things with the, and foods testing has always been a big part of it. Again, looking forwards, I don't know if it's going to help you, but looking backwards, it's so helpful in some cases that we're not going to leave it out in our investigation of you.
Such a great point. And if there's one thing I hope everyone takes away from this is that there is this huge opportunity to understand your bioindividuality and to assess on a layer of risk factors for your health that were previously imperceptible to you and likely not discussed with your physician. Okay, Reid, I'm going to keep going. You ready? Two more.
No.
How would you define your purpose?
Oh man, we're creating an army. My purpose really is to help as many people as possible learn how to get well and stay well naturally, so they in turn can educate others. And this should be taught to every mom and dad, so they can teach their kids and they can teach their kids.
Absolutely. And last question for you: entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Wow, that's a great question. I kind of grew up, not being afraid to sell. When I was 12 years old, my dad took me out to sell Christmas cards, and I won the knife in the Boy Scout. That Christmas, we had our big Boy Scout party, and I won the prize for selling the most Christmas cards. I was 12 years old. My dad taught me how to knock on doors, and I've been that way ever since.
I love that. I was going to say, that'd be really impressive if you sold them at Valentine's Day.
No, that would have been a trick.
Reid Davis, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Where can I send people to learn more about the important work you're doing in the world?
You know, we have our website. I'm not sure if we set up a special URL for you. Let me just look at it. Yeah, go to fdn.today/MW stands for Megan Walker. So it's fdn.today/MW. That's a short link we created just for your listeners. And we hope that they'll go and check us out.
Amazing. Well, we'll absolutely hook everyone up. We'll share it in our show notes. Thank you again for spending this time with me.
Very professional interview, Megan. Thank you.
Wasn't Reid amazing? I have to say on a personal level that functional testing actually changed both the trajectory of my own health, but also that of my practice. I, for a long time, was quite hesitant to make the recommendation of functional testing for my patients because I was very aware of the implicit cost associated with doing it. But what I realized as a clinician is that once I started to make that recommendation, not only did I significantly elevate the insight with which I was able to make my recommendations, but it also increased the compliance of the people that I was working with because they too finally had objective data to support how they were feeling. I truly believe that the functional testing industry has the capacity to transform people's health, and it allows us to start to look at our health from the lens of not just what's wrong, but how well it is actually functioning, how well it is doing what it is supposed to be doing. It's a whole new arena in which we can assess and act on our health. And I'm a firm believer that more data as it pertains to understanding our bodies is positive. But I want to know how you feel. So we're going to start something different this week over in our Facebook group, the Anthropology Collective, and on Instagram, on my Instagram, Dr. Megan Walker. We want to hear from you. Have you used functional testing in your own life, and was it helpful for you? We're going to be running a poll. I'd love to hear from you. And if you got some keen insights out of today's episode, take a quick screenshot of where you were in that episode and post it on the Instagram. Tag me, Dr. Megan Walker. I would love to give you a shout out. I'd love to check out and understand even more what's making you guys tick as our listeners. We've got some exciting shows coming up over the next few weeks. We're going to be breaking down how to create a seven-figure business working less than 25 hours a week. And I'll be joined in 2 weeks from now with Dr. Michelle Paris as we start to explore how we can disrupt and transform our broken healthcare system. So many exciting conversations that are going to be taking place over the next few weeks. So head on over to the Anthropology Collective, hit us up with our poll either there or on my Instagram. And as always, I'm Megan Walker, wishing you an amazing week ahead.